I'm coming to explain to you why we made Safe and Sound together with UNICEF. And as I said, it has been quite a long-standing project. We've worked with different stakeholders and actors to be able to provide a good document that would be helpful for states and actors in states to actually advance the rights of unaccompanied and separated children who arrive from their territory. So in the coming 20 minutes or so, I'll talk about this publication, I'll talk about who it is for, and also what it addresses and how. Now, Valeria has already mentioned some of the trends, and indeed we've seen that there has been a steady rise in the arrival of unaccompanied children in EU countries over the past few years. And what we are observing from our own records is that there will be a considerable increase in 2014. But the Eurostat data are not yet ready for unaccompanied and separated children, so we don't have the data as yet. We're seeing the trend is the same. The majority of those arriving are boys in the age range of 14 to 70 years old. The majority comes from Afghanistan, but also from Syria, Eritrea, Somalia, Guinea, some of Morocco, also from Egypt. And as Larry already mentioned, many do not register. And I think this can be shown, for example, by giving you the example of Italy, where already this year, in the first 10 months, 12,000 unaccompanied and separated children did arrive. However, only 1,000 or so actually registered and applied for asylum. So this means that around 11,000 children have moved on to other destinations, and likely that will be in Europe. There's a lot of peer pressure and pressure also from parents, communities, to go to certain destination countries. And we've seen that this really drives these onward irregular movements, as we call them. We've also noted, and this is also what actors in the different states told us, that children are very reluctant to share their family's whereabouts because they fear that if they reveal those whereabouts, that they may then be returned home. And as Valeria also mentioned, we see that children go missing, and this may happen already at the very early stages when they just have arrived. And as I said, Italy is a glaring example as we speak. We've seen that there's no uniform approach to protecting children who are unaccompanied and who arrive in Europe across EU member states. In some countries, we've seen that all children are channeled into the asylum procedure, regardless of any protection needs. But we've also seen, for example, that children are not allowed to enter the asylum procedure and just get a permit to stay until they turn 18 and after, whereafter they're then returned without any safeguards. Also, we've noted that children, when they turn 18, they can be returned. There are no plans for them in place. And some children actually then disappear from care because they know that they will get a plane ticket back when they turn 18, in addition to having a birthday cake. Another problem that we've noted is that there are very lengthy asylum procedures in some countries where lawyers are filing appeal upon appeal or introduce subsequent applications for children, and then these children stay for quite a long time in those countries and no longer have a link to their country of origin, lose contact with family, and then by the time actually their application is turned down, then it's very difficult to return them, and then issues of routing come into play and all the problems coming with that. Now let's turn to Safe and Sound, because of course we're very cognizant of these problems, and that's also why we wrote this guidance together with UNICEF. The guidance provides direction on how to operationalize the best interest principle of Article 3.1 of the Convention on the Rights of the Child. And it deals with the moment a child arrives in a territory or is found in a territory until the moment a durable solution is found. It also raises awareness of the legal obligations that states have, which may be regional, international, and national, and also suggests possible ways to ensure its fulfillment in practice. And it builds, in doing so, on noteworthy practice in various member states. It also aims to inspire and assist states to develop a best interest process and to ensure robust protection for unaccompanied and separated children, also for those who may not have a right to remain. So who's it for? It's, as I already said, it's mainly for EU member states, but also for associated countries like Iceland, Liechtenstein, and Switzerland. Also, we think there might be interest, and we've seen already that there is actually interest from other industrialized states in guidance, and this guidance really targets states with developed child protection, asylum, and migration systems. The guidance is a protection tool for all unaccompanied and separated children, hence also our collaboration with UNICEF, so it's not only protecting children who are seeking asylum, who are stateless, or might be of concern to UNHCR otherwise. We also look at child victims of trafficking and children who are outside their country of origin and who arrive in Europe. The principles of the guidance might be applied not only to unaccompanied children, but also to accompanied children. However, this guidance really looks at unaccompanied and separated children in particular. And it's intended for policymakers and practitioners, including the judiciary. The guidance builds on General Comment Number 14, which, as you know, came out last year and which explains the best interest principle for the first time as a substantive right, as a rule of procedure, and also as a fundamental interpretative legal principle. It also describes the features of best interest determination and best interest assessments, which, in the eyes of the Committee on the Rights of the Child, should be multidisciplinary. There should be reasoned decisions explaining how the best interests of the child were considered, and also the general comment presents a non-exhaustive list of factors for weighing best interests. So in the guidance we built, as I said, on the international legal framework, of course that's the Convention on the Rights of the Child, but also we build, in addition to General Comment Number 14, on General Comment Number 6, on children outside their country of origin, on General Comment Number 5, on implementing the Convention, and on General Comment Number 12, on the right to be heard. We also build, where that's relevant in the different EU countries, on the EU Asylum Acquis, including the Reception Conditions Directive, the Qualifications Directive, the Asylum Procedures Directive, the Dublin III Regulation, and the Family Reunification Directive as well. Also, we build on the EU Anti-Trafficking Directive and Returns Directive. And all these instruments embed Article 3.1, the best interest principle, very firmly now. We also build on policy and guidelines of UNHCR and UNICEF. And there's a long list, as you can see. I just would like to highlight a few. I think the last one, the Framework for the Protection of Children of UNHCR. That's a very recent document bringing together all UNHCR policy guidelines in a more succinct way, but also to flag that we have developed guidance already on determining best interest of the child, but those were for the field context. And I've listed those documents here. Number 3 is the third bullet point in the left column, UNHCR guidelines on best interest determinations. However, that product is really for the field, where UNHCR, UNICEF work together and work in camps, for example, refugee camps, where we really need the protection response. And this is, of course, very different. There's a different reality, of course, in the EU, where states lead that response and other different actors. We therefore recognise that there's need to develop guidance for industrialised countries. And we're trying to address some of the issues that we came across and which are a challenge for states as we speak. And some of them have also already been mentioned by Valeria. And they include, for example, how to build trust. We've noted that quite a few actors say that children don't want to cooperate, they don't want to reveal, for example, the whereabouts of their families, etc., etc. And we're trying to give some ideas about how that might best be done. We've also noted that data sharing is an issue. Between the different actors that come across children and work on children, and that actually those actors work on parallel tracks and not necessarily together, and don't exchange information. And here the issue then of data protection is often advanced as a blocking factor. We also touch on the issue of age assessment, aging out as well, family tracing, which is very particular, I think, in the context of Europe. I've worked a lot with family tracing outside Europe, and there's really a lot of willingness of parents and children to unite. But as I said, and as Valeria has also highlighted, children in the EU come in part with a different mission, not all of them, but some really come with another mission, and they're very much under pressure not to cooperate and give information. So it's really a challenge, we've noted, for states to deal with this issue, because mostly for children to be with their parents is in their best interest, of course, unless there's other like safety considerations. We also look at the factors for assessing best interests and for determining best interests, and therefore we use a very much general comment number 14, as I mentioned to you, but we also give some more guidance on how those different factors may be selected, what kind of information one might need and could look at, and how then those different factors might be weighed and balanced against each other. And we also look at the relationship of the best interest determination and best interest assessments and how they sit within the asylum and migration systems. So conditions that need to be in place, of course, for any best interest process, as we call it, to function, are the following. Of course, a child needs to get access to territory. And this is also mentioned in general comment number 6 of the Committee on the Rights of the Child. Then there should be preliminary identification, and if the age of the child is not clear and if there's doubt, then age assessment may have to be done. And then when age has been determined, as far as that is possible, then the child should be registered and documented and referred on to child protection services and get safe accommodation and care, healthcare, education, and at that stage also family tracing may be looked into if that's in the best interest of the child. So what we're proposing in the guidance is really how now to operationalize the best interest principle, because there's a lot now in the law, there's a lot of momentum, a lot of opportunities, there's an action plan, the commission, there's a lot on the way. But what we've seen that in practice, operationalizing the principle is not that evident. So we're proposing to do this through best interest assessments. These are also mentioned, by the way, in the general comment. And best interest assessments basically start when the child arrives or is found in the territory and are really about immediate actions for the child. And they can be undertaken by one person or maybe by more persons, depending on what the decision needs to be taken on. But it's really a simple procedure, assessing what's in the best interest of the child, for example, in terms of care, education, maybe psychological follow-up, etc., etc. Then we've also thought about how to make sure that children are actually channeled into the right procedure, because as I said, what we have noticed is that in some countries, children are just channeled into the asylum procedure, regardless of any protection needs. And it may very well be that then the system becomes clogged. Children then have to wait very long for a decision. It creates wrong expectations, and the outcomes may then be also rejection. And so what we've been trying to think about is how can we make sure that children actually go into the right pathway, follow the right pathway. And this we call process planning, whereby we have multiple actors, for example, the guardian or the social worker, and also somebody who's a legal advisor, who will, together with the child, decide which pathway may be in the best interest of the child to follow. And actually we have some examples also in member states where this is currently going on, and we call this good practice. Just very briefly, Germany and Belgium have such processes in place. Then, sort of at the end of the line, once the child have gone through the immigration process and the, if relevant, asylum procedure or trafficking procedure, and while this best interests are being continually assessed in terms of healthcare and other needs, then, of course, when there is a decision for the child, then we propose that because at that point it is so important that the child gets a good durable solution that is in the child's best interest, that actually a best interest determination is then carried out. And with this best interest determination come then enhanced procedural safeguards. This is also something that the Committee of the Rights of the Child in general comment number 14 proposes. But then again, also the committee says, and we have also taken this as a rule of thumb, that not for all decisions affecting children one would need to do a best interest determination with these enhanced procedural safeguards. And what do I mean by those enhanced procedural safeguards? Of course, a child would need to have a guardian or a key person who looks after their best interests. A child also needs legal advice or maybe legal representation in legal proceedings. But the important thing is that here, for example, at the end, in a best interest determination, that there's a reasoned decision setting out why best interests are important and how they have been considered. And this is something where we found information is actually lacking currently in decision making. And also there we would advocate for a multidisciplinary input in the decision making process. Now, what is the best interest determination? Where does it sit within the immigration procedure and asylum procedure? A bit looks at wider child rights, so it doesn't necessarily look at immigration or asylum. That has already been determined in those particular procedures. It comes generally after an asylum or immigration decision and doesn't overturn that decision as such, but it should identify the best durable solution for the child based on the options that are there on the table, so the outcome of the asylum or immigration decision. This would help ensure that decisions are in the best interest of the child and implementable, because we've seen that sometimes children have been rejected in final instance, and then they just linger in centres until they turn 18, and then they're being returned, which we find not to be in the best interest of the child, obviously. And so a bit, we hope, could really make sure that actors around the child actively are involved in identifying a durable solution, but again, based on the options available and based on the outcome of the asylum and immigration decision. Now, of course, one needs to look then at information that one might need, which may then go beyond the asylum or immigration decision while looking at that asylum and immigration decision, obviously. So, for example, expert reports may be useful. For example, medical reports, psychological reports, reports from education institutions. If there are any results of family tracing, those elements may need to come into a best interest determination, as well as, for example, if there has been a possibility to visit the family at home, home study results might go into a best interest determination. And then what's important, really, is to determine and to weigh the different factors. And those factors, I can just summarize them very briefly. This is a very limited overview, but as I said, this list of factors also is in general comment number 14. Early child safety is, of course, very important. The child's right to family life, survival and development, but also the views of the child, obviously. But also other elements need to be explored. For example, how long the child has stayed in the host country, whether it still has links and ties with the country of origin. The child's background, the child's experiences, reasons for separation, and so forth. And also to say that the best interest determination is really a rights-based exercise. It just looks and weighs all the rights, basically, in the convention that I've just outlined. So it's not necessarily a balancing act with immigration, but the immigration outcome. The immigration outcome is there, and then actors need to give input to the process and say, can a child be really returned? Is the family there? Is it safe for the child to go back to that family, for example? But also, we recommend that this best interest determination be carried out where a child has a positive decision, for example, on an asylum application, or has another right to stay, based on other legal frameworks. Now, of course, the challenging thing in doing the best interest determination is how does one balance all those different elements and factors? Well, first of all, one has to identify which factors are relevant to that individual child. But just very broadly, safety and the possibility of harm will outweigh usually most other factors, including, for example, family reunification, which is also, of course, very important and fundamental right for the child. Survival and development, and the right of the child to grow up in their own cultural context, with their own cultural networks, etc., etc., may also be outweighed by safety considerations. Now, what are the possible outcomes? There are different options that we've seen, where, for example, the immigration or asylum decision is negative, where normally the child wouldn't have a right to stay. We've seen that in some cases, states still grant leave to remain, or, for example, residence on humanitarian grounds, where, for example, it's not possible for the child to return because family hasn't been found and the child protection system is not able to take care of the child in the country of origin. And we also believe that these kind of statuses could be a possible outcome of the best interest determination in an individual case. But we also believe that it's really important that those statuses or kinds of leave that are then granted don't expire when a child turns 18. And that's what we are seeing in some member state that is happening. So I'll just terminate my my speech with some recommendations by UNHCR and UNICEF. What we think is really crucial is that actors who deal with unaccompanied children and that the unaccompanied child comes into contact with, that they seek a joint vision for the child. Also, we believe it's important to have procedures in which the child can be heard and also is properly supported with information so that the child knows what the options are for him or her at an early stage on. We also believe it's very important to create trust, or procedures to create trust, for example, through a guardian or social worker or a person that looks after the best interest of the child, in order to be able to gather information, which is so important to make a decision about the future of the child. The procedures also should be child-friendly, and also we recommend, along also with what is in the general comment number 14, that the more important the decision is for a child, the more important also the procedural safeguard should be. And also we recommend procedures which ensure a holistic approach with all bringing all the actors together, inputting into the process. And also processes and procedures which look not only at the short and medium term, but really at the long term, and which will allow children to develop into adulthood in a safe and sound environment. Thank you, and I hope that this snapshot overview will create some appetite and some interest among you, and we look forward to working with you and the Office in Ireland in particular on how this principle can be best operationalized and to ensure that the best interests of children are really all our primary consideration. Thank you.